So moving forward, Michael, I stumbled upon this really good report in Common Dreams, of course, one of my favorite compendium websites that aggregates so much great information. This one by John Queeley, a staff writer at Common Dreams. Torture report raises hopes, offers ammo for Bush and company prosecutions. And just reading from the beginning as we introduce our next guests, few, if any, people, given recent history and the consistent position of the Obama administration, are expecting that former President Bush or any of his top officials will ever see the inside of a U.S. courtroom, not to mention a prison cell, for their role in authorizing the torture of suspected terrorists. Despite that dim view, however, calls for prosecutions are now louder than they've been in years, and new hopes have surfaced that perhaps there will be some kind of justice in the many cases of torture that were disclosed yesterday, I actually say Tuesday, earlier this week, by the report released by the Senate. And that's what we're going to be focusing on this morning, the defiance of the Bush administration officials that we've heard the last few days, but also the potential for some kind of justice in these cases. We're joined by Glenn Carl, who is a career CIA field officer. He retired back in 2007 as the Deputy National Intelligence Officer for Transnational Threats. Sounds like a pretty complicated position that he had. His book, The Interrogator, details his involvement in the Enhanced Interrogation Program, which is, I guess, more comfortably known as torture. Glenn Carl, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you. We're also joined by Marcy Wheeler, who writes widely about the legal aspects of the quote-unquote war on terror, as well as its effects on civil liberties. Marcy Wheeler, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And then finally, another voice who's no stranger to WBAI listeners, Ray McGovern, a former CIA analyst whose responsibilities included chairing national intelligence estimates and regularly conducting early morning briefings of the president during daily briefs. He's the co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. Ray McGovern, welcome back to WBAI.
Thank you.
Glenn, let me start with you. A lot has been said already, but just your sense as we start off the conversation, your sense about what was released. Obviously, it's a 500-page summary of thousands of pages that really weren't released. It was a surprise to some, but to many, it wasn't. Your general thoughts about what was released on Tuesday?
Well, the people who claim that they're surprised either have been in a cloud or delusional. And I think Vice President Biden put it just about the best, which is that this is an act of which the nation should actually be proud. Frost said that the fact is the sweetest dream that labor knows, and you have hundreds of officers and millions of pages of real-time assessments and arguments and struggles to work our way through the enhanced interrogation program of what was right, wrong, and not working. And they tell a devastating and truthful story just what I've said and others, which is that enhanced interrogation was illegal, immoral, ineffective, unnecessary, and a total mistake. So this is a good thing, because by affirming our ideals and saying, here's how we strayed, we actually make ourselves stronger. We in no way make ourselves weaker, as frankly the Republicans claim for various reasons, which is essentially to avoid culpability for a national disgrace.
What was alarming to me is what I've read, along with obviously the techniques, some of the approaches that were taken in these quote-unquote enhanced interrogations, was the fact that there continued to be insistence and perhaps a delusional or deliberately deceptive insistence that this was leading to workable intelligence that was keeping America safe, the U.S. safe, so to speak. Your thoughts about that, having been a field officer within the CIA, as to how they conveyed that to the U.S. public?
Sure. Well, John Brennan was very careful, and I think highly of John. I've worked closely with him, but in this instance, he used his skills to as you said, thread a rhetorical needle. If you listen to what he said, he was careful to say that enhanced interrogation techniques did not produce useful information. He said prisoners who were subjected to enhanced interrogation provided useful information. That's a fact. That's the case with my detainee, who was typical, frankly, of the situation. My detainee did cooperate, or if he didn't cooperate, nonetheless, I obtained useful information from him by using appropriate methods, which means that I essentially talked to him and established rapport. And the information was useful in the operation against Bin Laden. Breton also was careful not to say that the information provided led us to Bin Laden, but that it was useful. So John spoke truthfully, although very carefully and with nuance, to in a way to dissemble and avoid all sorts of landmines. But he confirmed what the report says, which is that EITs did not provide information. In fact, they harmed the obtention of useful information.
So
that detainees, however, did provide useful information when they were interrogated appropriately.
So take us through that, Glenn, and I want to get to our other guests in a moment, but take us through that. You said you approached your detainees, the people that you were interrogating, in a different manner. How did the instructions come down? Did you get instructions to carry out these quote-unquote enhanced interrogation tactics and chose not to use them? How does that work in that system?
That's true. I was involved, or my involvement was in the very early, early phase of the enhanced interrogation program. So early on, and this is in 2002, and then early 2003, that the agency had not had time to develop any sort of formal procedures, limitations, and training, and so on. The agency did realize that, oh my gosh, you know, how are we going to handle this? We can't just sort of go out there and wing it. And so they scrambled, and the results of the scrambling were catastrophic, because they hired two charlatans named Jepson and Mitchell, who I'd like some of their $81 million for being incompetent.
Right.
At my time, there were no regulations. So what I was told, this will sound unbelievable, but I was told, pressure him, be aggressive, be creative, pressure him. And then I was told, and these are verbatim instructions, you will do whatever it takes to get him to talk. Do you understand? And that was simply appalling. And it was obvious. And it was obvious to me from the first second that I was confronted with the critical moment in my career. And I realized, and this is not hindsight, this was my real-time reaction and thought, that to me this was the critical moment in the history of the CIA and one of the critical moments for the United States since World War II. And sadly, in many ways, we failed that test.
Speaking with Glenn Carl, who's a career CIA field officer, retired in 2007. He was a deputy national intelligence officer for transnational threats and the author of the book, The Interrogator. I want to get to you, Ray McGovern, because some of the things that Glenn Carl just described, kind of as this, catch-as-catch-can approach in the early stages of the post-9/11 catastrophe, that's in many ways how the officials have presented it, as that there was, maybe there was a little fumbling of the policy, but ultimately it was in the best interest of the United States. Your understanding of the deep-rooted, the nature of the CIA for so many years, how was this part and parcel of what's always been present at the CIA?
It was a day of deep shame this week when that report was issued, and no one gets actionable intelligence by techniques like rectal rehydration. And John Brennan yesterday, Glenn is quite right, he was very careful, but the impression you got was opposite to the truth. No actionable intelligence was gotten through these techniques. And Dianne Feinstein, to her great credit, the senator who supported her troops, her staffers, and did not throw them under the bus, she immediately tweeted, right after Brennan got finished, she said, look, it's a lie to say that we can't tell, that it's unknowable. We know that any actionable intelligence was gotten before, all caps, before any of these enhanced interrogation techniques. And she also said, we also know that no good information ever comes from aggressive or abusive approaches. And that's, of course, what the head of Army Intelligence said on the 6th of September, 2006, 3 hours before he knew that Bush and Cheney were going to lie about the utility, the profitability, or the efficacy of these techniques. Last thing I'll say is that enhanced interrogation techniques, let's just say torture, all right?
Enhanced interrogation techniques is a direct literal translation of the German Sachaftsvernehmung. That's what the Gestapo called them. I have the Gestapo manual, and guess what? The enhanced techniques are identical to the ones that we use, with a couple of small enhancements made by the psychologists who I won't say any more because I want to hear about Morsi.
Well, Marcy, your thoughts and maybe comment on, you know, notwithstanding what Ray and Glenn just pointed out, the defiance that we've seen, particularly in Dick Cheney, but, you know, many other officials, the defiance that they have. Dick Cheney's words, literally, "I'd do it again." How is that a reflection of a culture of complete impunity in this country?
Well, one of the things I think that gets missed in this debate about efficacy is, as Carl Levin made clear in a report he released in 2009, this wasn't about interrogation first and foremost. It was about what's called exploitation. And included in exploitation is both false confessions that you can use for propaganda purposes and getting people to flip, getting people to become spies for you. The detainee that everyone is sort of talking around is a guy by the name of Hafan Gul, who offered up information on the courier that would lead eventually to Osama bin Laden. And then for some reason, they decided that they should torture him after he cooperated. He ultimately agreed to try and infiltrate al-Qaeda in Pakistan for us, and we've since killed him in a drone strike. But that's sort of the history we're talking about. Even more importantly, there's another detainee who only gets discussed in a footnote called Ibn Sheikh al-Libi, who we sent to Egypt to be tortured. And under torture, under the same techniques we used with, for example, Abu Zubaydah, he claimed there was a link between Iraq and al-Qaeda. So when Dick Cheney is out there saying, and that's what was used on the floor of the UN to get us into war in Iraq. So when Dick Cheney says, "I would do it again," he should be asked, "Do you mean you would develop false confessions to get the United States into a war of choice in Iraq, which ended up being the biggest foreign policy blunder of American history?" I mean, Dick Cheney should be asked about the 4,000 Americans who died in that war based on his false presentations about what the intelligence said. And that, I think, is missing from this debate. Another thing that's missing from this debate is, you know, the torturers are out there saying, "But you didn't interview any of us." The victims also were not interviewed, and we have reason to believe that we'd have even worse details if they had been interviewed. But what they're suggesting is that 6 million CIA cables do not present an accurate picture of what the CIA was doing, which, if that's true, should be a scandal unto itself. I mean, if the CIA's 6 million cables recording this program don't accurately represent what went on, and we have an entire, I mean, I don't think that's the case. And I think Glenn would agree that that's not the case, although I think in his case, there were cables that disappeared. But there's a record there. And if the CIA's records don't accurately represent what they did, that's a problem.
Glenn, Carl, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, no, Marcy, I agree and totally with really everything that we've just heard from both of our colleagues. It would be laughable were it not outrageous for the defenders of torture and the policies of just about really a de facto putsch of our rule of law. I mean, that's another issue which I've written about some, but you can put that aside for just a moment. My colleagues, hundreds of my colleagues involved for all these years, all worked very hard and tried to describe in real time, you know, what they were debating and doing then. The record is there, and the record is devastating, and it all concords that my colleagues were troubled. We found that this did not work, and here's what happened. So for the defenders of these policies to say somehow that the CIA then, colluded over 15 years and 6 million cables, so that the story doesn't represent the facts, which are the torture is good and worked, is just, it would be laughable were it not disgusting. The story is there. It's all clear and it's all true and it's all catastrophe.
Marcy Wheeler, that you write a lot about the legal issues related to the war on terror. What about the perhaps the million-dollar question, which seems to already have been answered by the administration years ago, the current administration, about bringing these folks to justice? What is the likelihood? I mean, Michael Ratner was formerly of the Center for Constitutional Rights, somebody who's prosecuted all sorts of human rights criminals. He said Bush and company shouldn't plan on visiting the Prado soon unless they want to end up in a Spanish jail. What's the likelihood of that kind of thing happening?
Well, it is, in fact, the case that a couple of CIA officers were prosecuted in absentia in Italy for a rendition they carried out, sending somebody to Egypt to be tortured. So that's possible, and it is certainly likely that these people shouldn't be traveling or probably aren't going to be comfortable traveling, although a lot of people whose identities are, in fact, not covert were still hidden in this report. One of the most ridiculous things is, for example, a lawyer whose name was all over Senator Levin's report 5 years ago, his name was redacted, named by a guy by the name of Jonathan Friedman. A woman who was the basis for one of the characters in Zero Dark Thirty, she's not covert. She's also one of the people who was making the most ridiculous claims about the usefulness of torture. Her name was hidden throughout this report, so you're not allowed to know who is making these cases and who is rendering people accidentally who shouldn't have been. So, but I think, you know, the other thing people need to understand from this report is, in addition to showing what a failure torture was, it shows how these large covert operations we've done in the name of the war on terror get out of control because of the structure of accountability that we've not used, that we've basically said to the CIA, go crazy. And I think that we could draw the same lessons from Obama's drone strike program, which was authorized by the very same presidential authorization going back to September 17th, 2001. And one of the reasons why the Obama administration is not going to prosecute these torturers is because he's using the very same legal authorization to conduct drone strikes, which have resulted in just as many accidental deaths, more accidental deaths, as many intelligence failures, as much blowback. And so, the story of the unaccountable war on terror doesn't end with torture. Right. And I think it's important for people to remember that.
That's a very good point. And Ray McGovern, I'll give you the last word, because in your recent essay, CIA's Torturous Maneuvers on Torture, you talk about this kind of facade of reform within the CIA that's even being pushed by the Obama administration, but that ultimately it's really business as usual, isn't it?
Well, yes, Mario, unfortunately. Actually, I did one yesterday as well, which spells out a lot of what Marcy has been saying about the, quote, efficacy, end quote, of torture. Let me just say that, you know, you can't give, quote, authorities, end quote, which Dick Cheney says the CIA had. You can't give people authorities to commit acts that are intrinsically evil. I'm talking about rape. I'm talking about slavery. I'm talking about torture, all of which fit into the category, the moral category of intrinsic evil, always wrong. In other words, they're not wrong because there's a UN Convention against Torture, which we signed. They're not wrong because there are U.S. statutes against it. They're wrong because human beings don't do those kinds of things, don't do rectal rehydration to other human beings. So that's number one. The other thing that's really important here is that when the head of Army Intelligence said, and I quote, no good intelligence has ever come from abusive techniques, history shows that. And the empirical evidence of the last 5 years, hard years, also shows that. He was referring to 2001 until 2005 and 2006 when he spoke. And so everyone knew, everyone who was paying attention, that you don't get good information from torture. But as Marcy so adroitly points out, if your objective is to get bad information, man, torture works like a charm, and there are several documents showing that the emphasis right after 9/11 was to get information no matter how, as Carl points out, do what you have to do to make sure we have the information that Al-Qaeda was cooperating with Saddam Hussein And indeed, this fellow al-Libi, quote, confessed, end quote, under the Egyptian torture. 3 days later, President Bush used his, quote, confession, end quote, to persuade Congress to vote for war in October 2002. And indeed, a couple of months later, when Colin Powell and his deputy there, Colonel Larry Wilkerson, were about to throw in the towel and say, this is a crock, as we say in the Bronx, guess what? George Tenet and John McLaughlin showed up with, quote, a new report, end quote, which was the same report from al-Libi showing that that al-Qaeda was sending operatives up to Saddam Hussein to be trained in weapons of mass destruction to include nuclear weapons. So, you know, if you want bad information, man, works like a charm. Dianne Feinstein and her very courageous staffers found that out, and that report is a credit to our country.
Unbelievable. Ray McGovern, I want to thank you all for joining us. I would love to continue this conversation. Perhaps we'll do some follow-up next week.